How can a microchip manufacturer keep track of 250 million control points at once?
How can technology behind animated movies help enterprises reimagine their future?
Built for Change listeners know those answers and more. I'm Elise Hu.
And I'm Josh Klein. We're the hosts of Built for Change, a podcast from Accenture.
We talk to leaders of the world's biggest companies to hear how they've reinvented their business to create industry-shifting impact.
And how you can, too.
New episodes are coming soon, so check out Built for Change wherever you get your podcasts.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, from the very beginning, Roy Moore has built a legal and political career as a conservative crusader and man of faith. It's the early battles he fought on that front that may shield him from the recent accusations in today's special election. It's Tuesday, December 12th.
So over the years, Roy Moore had built up something of a reputation around town, a very quiet reputation.
When I was 15 years old, I began working after school as a waitress. Mr. Roy Moore came in almost every night.
But it was known to people who lived there that perhaps he had an eye for younger women.
Alan Blinder has been covering Roy Moore for years.
That he would look for and date women far younger than he was.
He would compliment me on my looks. He would sometimes pulled the ends of my long hair as I walked by him.
But he never faced any significant scrutiny for it.
He said, "You're just a child." And he said, "I am the district attorney of Etowah County. And if you tell anyone about this, no one will ever believe you."
People just ignored it, to be quite frank with you, until this year.
Decades later, in the lead-up to today's special election in Alabama, those allegations have come under intense scrutiny. But the fact that the people of Alabama may look past those claims can be traced back to a different reputation that Roy Moore was building during that time.
Roy Moore's kind of a hotshot lawyer. When he's in Gadsden in the 1970s, he is provocative, he is stirring people up, he's willing to say controversial things to people, and he's not toiling in anonymity, to say the least.
You know, it was obvious he was trying to make a name for himself as kind of a crusader.
Bill Willard was a lawyer in Gadsden, Alabama, in the 1970s.
This first case that I had before him, I'd been appointed to represent a young lady. It was an arson case. She was accused of having burned her business in order to collect the insurance money, and immediately when he took the bench, he hung a small hand-carved plaque of the Ten Commandments up over the bench.
So Roy Moore is a carpenter, if you will, and he had made this plaque of the Ten Commandments. Everything from thou shalt not kill to honor thy father and thy mother, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy.
Just hung it on the wall. It was above and in front of the bench and directly across from the jury box. My client leaned over to me and referenced the plaque of the Ten Commandments on the wall and said, "You know, Mr. Willard, I'm an atheist, and I don't like having that plaque up there on the wall. I want you to object to it for me."
And what was Judge Roy Moore's physical and what was his verbal reaction to you?
He overruled my motion, and he seemed almost gleeful.
Gleeful.
I was quite shocked the next morning to see a rather extensive article in the morning newspaper.
The local paper?
It just appeared to me to have been a news release that he had prepared prior to hanging the plaque. My assumption was that he had wanted to have somebody state an objection on the record, and then he immediately got to the newspaper when I made the motion.
Alabama County Circuit Court Judge Roy Moore. He's being sued for displaying the Ten Commandments in his courtroom.
A local controversy starts, the local papers cover it, people start talking more and more. But he doesn't really suffer any political illness because of it. He, if anything, grows a little bit stronger, a little bit more prominent.
They sued him for the Ten Commandments hanging on the wall, and they sued him because he wouldn't stop praying. He wouldn't bow to their threats.
And I'm going to just say right now to the ACLU, if they're listening, I don't think there's any of them here, but they might catch it somewhere. I got them up in my office, and I ain't taking them down either, Roy.
So it was a small local battle, but Roy Moore's takeaway from it seemed to be he can get a lot of attention, that he can build a following out of folks who want to see the Ten Commandments in places like courthouses in Alabama. He learns it can be a very powerful political tool if you want to build a following.
And on the day when we have more Judge Moore sitting on the bench and more people like Judge Moore sitting in the state houses and in the White House, I'll tell you, on that day, America will be America again.
Modern day hero, his feet on the ground, stands up for God and he never will back down. Fought for his country and he fights for the truth. Judge Roy Moore cares for me and you.
So less than a decade after Roy Moore has his initial dust up over the Ten Commandments in Etowah County, he is the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. He's won his first statewide election, and he goes a lot bigger than the plaque he had put up in his courtroom in Gadsden. This time he goes for a 2-something-ton monument that requires a crane to get to the Supreme Court.
The monument did not arrive at the judicial building until about 9:30 p.m.
Roy Moore talked about this incident in his 2005 audiobook called So Help Me God.
And we were forced to work throughout the night, positioning it in exactly the right location.
Roy Moore didn't tell anyone else on the court that this was going to happen.
Wow.
But he had a film crew there.
Huh.
The next morning, with the monument covered by a red veil, the news media arrived.
To chronicle this moment for the history of the Alabama judiciary and also the history of Roy Moore's political career.
I began my remarks as follows. By the authority vested in me by the Constitution of the State of Alabama as Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, I'm pleased to present this monument depicting the moral foundation of our law and hereby authorize it to be placed in the rotunda of the Alabama Judicial Building. In order to establish justice, we must invoke the favor and guidance of Almighty God.
What does that tell you, that he wanted it to be chronicled?
Roy Moore knew exactly what he was doing and the potential political implications of what he was doing when he had that monument installed. I don't think there's anyone who really doubts that he knew that it would encourage and incite debate about the Ten Commandments and its role and place in public life. There was a lawsuit challenging the placement of the Ten Commandments at the Alabama Supreme Court, and it lands before a federal judge in Montgomery.
Judges do not normally find themselves on trial in their own courtroom, but then again, there's never been anything normal about the legal issues I have confronted. On November 12, 2003, I sat in the witness chair in front of the very bench from which, until just a couple of months before, I had presided as the Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court.
Eventually, this judge decides that Roy Moore needs to have the monument removed, and Roy Moore refuses.
Without an acknowledgement of God, I cannot do my duty. I must acknowledge God. It says so in the Constitution of Alabama. It says so in the First Amendment to the United States Constitution.
And he says, I'm not going to have this Ten Commandments monument taken out of the state Supreme Court building. And that only prompts more controversy, which is probably what Roy Moore expected to happen and perhaps wanted to happen.
Put the Ten Commandments back! You ain't taking my Ten Commandments, you ain't taking my Bible, and you ain't touching my faith! Put it back!
Now we've given up of righteousness for a life of indulgent sin. For when abortion is no longer called murder, when sodomy is deemed a right, then good is now called evil. And darkness is now called light.
Roy Moore became something of a martyr among his supporters for defying this judge, for trying to keep the monument.
Christians just shrugged their shoulders, afraid to take a stand. And from the grave, you can hear their voices cry. The victory's already been won. Just glorify the Father as did his only Son. And when your work on this earth is done, when you've traveled where they trod, you'll leave the land that was left to you. One nation under God.
By the end of 2003, Roy Moore is out of a job.
So he literally sacrifices his career on the altar of the Ten Commandments.
He sacrificed his job. I wouldn't say he sacrificed his career.
Please join me in welcoming Chief Justice Roy Moore.
So with that said, my guest tonight on the program is none other than Judge Roy Moore.
Here he is, Judge Roy Moore.
The Ten Commandments controversy gave Roy Moore a national platform.
This is the Simon Conway Show here on News Radio 1040 WHO, and I'm very privileged to say we have another potential presidential candidate in our studio.
He was, in a lot of ways, one of the most prominent figures of the Christian right.
He is former Alabama Supreme Court Justice Roy Moore, made famous for refusing to remove the Ten Commandments from his building, and that cost you your job, sir. Welcome to the Simon Conway Show.
Well, thank you, Simon. It's nice to be with you.
So it sounds like Roy Moore's first run-in with the Ten Commandments helps get him onto the state Supreme Court. And once he's on the state Supreme Court, his second run-in with the Ten Commandments gets him a national platform.
That's exactly correct. And then he's off and running.
I believe in the Second Amendment.
You think that homosexuality or homosexual conduct should be illegal today? That's a yes or no question.
Homosexual conduct
should be
illegal. Yes.
Should be illegal.
Yes.
So Roy Moore becomes somehow an even more controversial figure after he gets kicked off the bench.
And just because it's done behind closed doors, it can still be prohibited by state law. Do you know that bestiality, the relationship between man and beast, is prohibited in every state? Do you know that?
Did I ask you about having sex with a cow?
No, you didn't. But it's the same thing.
No, it's not the same. You mean homosexuality is the same thing as bestiality?
It is a moral precept upon which this country was founded.
Now, he starts talking about President Obama and whether he was born in the United States.
Donald Trump gets a lot of the credit because he was the most prominent face of birtherism. But Roy Moore was there from the beginning and has pushed it up until recently during this campaign that President Obama was not born in the United
States. Also said Muslims should not sit in Congress. You go down that
list. He talks about Muslims. He becomes known as something of an Islamophobe.
Of course they can serve, but they understand what they swear the Bible on, they swear to on the Bible. It's the God that is not of their faith.
He becomes known to any number of people as a bigot, but to any number of other people, he's also a hero.
Throughout our history, our country has been one nation under God, recognizing that our inalienable rights are endowed by our Creator and not by man. Can the state acknowledge God? It certainly can. And I believe that for America to continue to enjoy the blessings of liberty, it must. And we must always recognize God as the source of those liberties. And if at the end of my journey, my life has drawn attention to that one true God, I will stand with the Apostle Paul who said, "I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith." 2 Timothy 4:7. The removal of our right to publicly acknowledge God is a cancer that will slowly take the life of our nation, and it must be stopped.
In your mind, Alan, does this story of the Ten Commandments, starting with the wooden plaque in Gadsden, all the way up through the 2-ton granite version in Montgomery, and the fallout in both cases, does that explain why Roy Moore might be in the place that he is right now? Why he might simultaneously be facing a slew of allegations of inappropriate sexual behavior towards teenage girls, and why the people of Alabama might elect him as their next senator. Is this a man who, in the eyes of his supporters, can do no wrong?
Absolutely. Roy Moore built up this massive amount of goodwill among evangelical voters when he stood up for the Ten Commandments. I mean, just a tremendous amount of political capital when he did that. And voters have not forgotten that in Alabama. This is a state where we dare defend our rights is the state motto. And as one consultant noted to me a couple months ago, Roy Moore is seen as the guy who's done that. He's seen as the person who, more than perhaps any other politician, has stood up for what the state so often embodies. And because of his defiance, because of his insistence, because of his consistency on issues like the Ten Commandments, that has given him something of a shield when he's been criticized, especially over the last several weeks. And that's why he's still a contender.
I don't think you throw out 35 years of a man's career and his reputation because of unsubstantiated allegation from 1979.
I mean, look at all the women that came out and accused Donald Trump. Where are they now? What are we hearing from them now? We're hearing nothing but crickets. And I think this is a ploy to distract the voters here in Alabama, to confuse them, and to keep them home from the polls.
We do find the timing and the narrative surrounding these allegations to be suspect. I've called this press conference today because I felt it was necessary to show the world, the media, the nation, why we as women are united in our support for Judge Roy Moore.
I dare say that there has not been a politician as bold, determined, and courageous in fighting for the cause of liberty and our rights since the times of John Quincy Adams. His personal passion for doing what is right is driven by his knowledge of the truth and a fear of God.
Today, voters in Alabama will choose between Republican Roy Moore and Democrat Doug Jones for their open Senate seat. We'll be right back.
I'm Shane Goldmacher. I'm a national political correspondent for the New York Times covering the 2024 election. I have off and on for years covered the role of money in politics, and that means sifting through tens of thousands of line items in campaign reports, looking at who's getting paid, how much they're getting paid, who's donating to these campaigns, who's reserved the most ads on Google, who's this billionaire changing the shape of the race with a single check. Look, the campaign spin, the strategists tell you one thing, the numbers don't really lie, and those numbers help us ask the right questions. That's what's so special about the New York Times. We get to tap the collective knowledge and wisdom of my colleagues who have expertise in every nook and cranny of this country and this campaign trail to tell you the full story of what's happening in these critical moments in the last few weeks of the election. If this kind of coverage is important to you, you can support it by subscribing to the New York Times at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's what else you need to know today.
This was an attempted terrorist attack. Thank God the perpetrator did not achieve his ultimate goals.
A 27-year-old man who detonated a pipe bomb between two of Manhattan's busiest subway stations on Monday says he was retaliating against U.S. airstrikes in the war on ISIS. Aka Ed Ula, an immigrant from Bangladesh who was living in Brooklyn, told investigators that he chose the location because of its Christmas-themed posters, a motive that recalled past terror attacks on Christmas markets in Europe. Police say Ula had strapped the bomb to his body with Velcro and zip ties, badly injuring himself and four others when it detonated.
Let's be clear, as New Yorkers, our lives revolve around the subways. Choice of New York is always for a reason, because we're a beacon to the world, and we actually show that a society of many faiths and many backgrounds can work, and we show that democracy can work.
And
Well, good morning. My name is Rachel Crooks, and I think you're all probably familiar with my story.
In a joint news conference on Monday, three of the women who accused President Trump of sexual harassment and assault prior to his election came forward again with their accounts and called on Congress to investigate the president's conduct.
About 12 years ago, as a young receptionist in Trump Tower, I was forcibly kissed by Mr. Trump during our first introduction. Mr. Trump repeatedly kissed my cheeks and ultimately my lips in an encounter that has since impacted my life, well beyond the initial occurrence.
The women, Rachel Crooks, Samantha Holvey, and Jessica Leeds, said they hoped their accusations would be taken more seriously after the wave of accusations that have toppled the careers of powerful men in the media, business, and politics.
I want to believe that as Americans, we can put aside our political inclinations and admit that some things, in fact, do transcend politics, that we will hold Mr. Trump to the same standard as Harvey Weinstein and the other men who were held accountable for their reprehensible behavior.
President Trump has previously denied the allegations of the more than dozen women who have accused him of unwanted touching, forcible kissing, or groping. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you tomorrow.